This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. The three-day G7 summit drew to a close on Sunday, with leaders promising to tackle China's growing influence, fight climate change, get more COVID-19 jabs to poor countries, and keep up their economic stimulus programs. The summit was the first by the leaders of the United States, Japan, Germany, Britain, France, Italy, and Canada since U.S. President Joe Biden became so. Amongst the pledges made, the G7 said that it would meet a long overdue funding pledge of $100 billion a year by rich countries to help poorer ones cut emissions and cope with global warming. Aid campaigners said the promises remain vague and could undermine efforts for a new global deal to cut emissions later in the year. The G7 also promised to halt and reverse biodiversity loss by 2030. Israel's parliament has narrowly approved a new coalition government, ending the 12-year historic rule of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. It also sends the polarizing leader into the opposition. Naftali Bennett, a former ally of Netanyahu-turned-rival, becomes prime minister and was sworn in into office after a 60-59 vote. Promising to try to heal a divided nation, Bennett will preside over a fragile coalition comprised of 8 parties with deep ideological differences. 71-year-old Netanyahu made clear he has no intention of exiting the political stage. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. New COVID-19 cases are declining across much of the United States, even in some states with vaccine-hesitant populations. But almost all states bucking that trend have lower-than-average vaccination rates. Case totals nationally have declined in a week from a 7-day average of nearly 21,000 on May 29th to around 14,000 Saturday. Experts said some states are seeing increased immunity because there were high rates of natural spread of the disease. But Dr. Leanna Nguyen is concerned that the natural immunity of those who have been exposed to the coronavirus may soon wane. Russian President Vladimir Putin said that he expected his summit this week with U.S. President Joe Biden to help establish dialogue between the two countries and to restore personal contacts. In an interview released by state television Sunday, Biden will meet Putin on June 16th in Geneva for a summit amid strained bilateral relations on a wide array of issues. Putin said Russia would be ready to hand over cyber criminals to the United States if Washington did the same for Moscow, and the two powers reached an agreement to that effect. The White House has said that Biden will bring a ransomware cyber attack emanating from Russia at the June 16th summit. President Biden and Turkish counterpart Recep Tayyip Erdogan have known each other for years, but their meeting Monday will be their first as heads of state. It comes as a particularly tense moment for relations between the two countries. The list of disagreements is unusually long for the two NATO allies. There's U.S. support for Kurdish fighters in Syria, as well as Turkey's purchase of a Russian weapon system. Biden also infuriated Ankara by declaring that the Ottoman-era mass killing and deportations of Armenians was genocide. Previous U.S. presidents had avoided using that term. Erdogan and Biden are scheduled to meet at a NATO summit in Brussels. And Pope Francis on Sunday demanded that humanitarian aid reach hungry people in war-torn Tigray region of northern Ethiopia, where Ethiopian and Eritrean soldiers are blocking food as well as other assistance. More at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, June 14, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawi's president recalls so-called bad apples Malawi diplomats.
The president also told the nation that before this incident happened, his administration had already identified what he referred to as bad apples within the foreign missions of Malawi, and that those had already been served with letters of recall.
Zimbabwe announces new lockdown measures amid fears of a new COVID-19 wave. Cameroon helps Central African Republic displaced persons, and a former Liberian Supreme Court Associate Justice says President Weah's government must comply with ECOWAS court judgment.
I have no choice in this matter but to work along with my lawyers to ensure that Weah government fully complies with the ruling of the court, which means basically that I be reinstated as Associate Justice.
And we'll examine Botswana's HIV infections during COVID-19 lockdown. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Malawi's president, Lazarus Chakwera, has condemned what he calls the despicable behavior of a group of bad apples Malawian diplomats who were expelled from South Africa last week and given 72 hours to leave the country for abusing their diplomatic privileges. South Africa ejected the diplomats and their families after an investigation by the South African Revenue Services found a tax rip-off whereby the diplomats constantly bought alcohol at duty-free prices and sold it locally. Sean Campodeni, Director of Communications for President Chakwera, says the president told Malawian Sunday Night that he has already recalled the bad apples diplomats.
The president was giving the nation an update on the situation, and in his statement, he informed the nation that he had been in touch with his South African counterpart, His Excellency President Cyril Ramaphosa, and during that exchange, he condemned the conduct of his diplomats and also reiterated Malawi's commitment to the continued warm and cordial bilateral relations between the two countries. Additionally, the president also told the nation that before this incident happened, his administration had already identified many, many what he referred to as bad apples within the foreign missions of Malawi, and that those had already been served with letters of recall demanding that they return home. He also told the nation that Malawians who would be deployed to foreign missions to replace them had already been identified, and that confirmation hearings before Parliament were already underway, and that he expected that once these new diplomats were sent to these foreign missions, they would redeem the reputation that has been stained by this crop of diplomats that have been recalled already.
Sean, according to the South African government, this scheme cost the South African government 100 million rand. Was there any indication that South Africa would like for Malawi to refund South Africa?
No, there has been no communication to that effect. In fact, the South African government has indicated that their action on this matter was to expel the diplomats and brand them as persona non grata, which the Malawi president fully agrees with and supports, as well as having them stripped of their diplomatic status in keeping with the statutes of the Vienna Convention on the same.
Is there a possibility your government can prosecute these former diplomats?
The Ministry of Foreign Affairs is reviewing all of those issues on a case-by-case basis, as the information and details on these individuals and their involvement in this scheme come to light.
Did South Africa indicate how long this scheme was going on?
South Africa indicated that they have been investigating this matter for a number of years, and so they have just concluded that investigation and were in a position to take this kind of action.
Thank you very much, Sean.
Thank you for having me on Daybreak.
Sean Campodeni is Director of Communications for Malawian President Lazarus Chakwera. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. Zimbabwe has announced new preventive measures to guard against the spread of COVID-19 in what the government fears may be the beginning of a third wave. Reporter Kuza Navashi has details from Harare.
Announcing the reintroduction of the lockdown Saturday night on national television, Vice President Constantino Chiwenga said complacency had resulted in a recent spike in cases of the coronavirus responsible for the COVID-19 disease.
In addition, our vaccination against COVID-19 is going on very well. The country is, however, experiencing a surge in cases. The last 7 days have seen 596 new cases and 26 deaths as compared to the same period in May last year, where we had 132 new cases and 6 deaths.
Chiwenga, who doubles as Zimbabwe's health minister, said all gatherings except for funerals would be banned come Monday. Only 30 people would be allowed at funerals. He did not indicate when the new measures will be reviewed. Itairu Sike, head of non-profit community working group on health in Zimbabwe, commended the government for tightening the lockdown to avoid a pending third wave disaster.
Yes, this may look a bit draconian, but the measures are still necessary if we are to save lives. So it is important that the people of Zimbabwe should embrace these measures. It is also important for those Zimbabweans that are eligible to be vaccinated to come forward and willingly, you know, get vaccinated if the country is to move towards, you know, achieving the herd immunity of vaccinating at least 60% of the population, which translates to about 10 million Zimbabweans.
Zimbabwe's vaccination effort against the infection has recently been hit by shortages of the shots. But officials say the country still has stocks of the 1.7 million vaccines it has received from China, Russia, and India since February. Last week, Zimbabwe received 25,000 Sputnik doses from Russia. That was a few days after it rejected Johnson & Johnson vaccines from the African Union, financed by the African Export-Import Bank. Zimbabwe has 39,852 confirmed coronavirus infections and 1,632 deaths, according to the Johns Hopkins University, which tracks the global outbreak. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
A former Associate Justice of Liberia's Supreme Court says the independence of the country's judicial system is at its lowest ebb. Justice Kabina Janet says there is a gigantic filth in the judiciary. There has to be a cleansing in order to rekindle public confidence in the system. He says the Liberian Supreme Court, as it is today, is an extension of both the executive and legislative branches of government. Associate Justice Janet was impeached in March 2019 for granting a writ of prohibition petition brought by petroleum dealers in Liberia to stop the government from collecting a U.S. 25-cent road tax. Last November, the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS Community Court of Justice, ordered the Liberian government to reinstate Justice Janet and pay him $200,000 as reparation for what the court called moral prejudice suffered in the violation of his rights. The Liberian government appealed, but the court again this month rejected the appeal. Justice Janet says he and his lawyers will not rest until President George Weah's government complies fully with the ECOWAS court rulings.
I have always taken the position that the government of Liberia has no discretion in this matter. I have been given the right to exercise an option whether to retire and get all the benefits appertaining thereto or to be reinstated.
Would you like to retire or would you like to be reinstated as a member of the Liberian Supreme Court?
This, for me, is a matter to do with complying, full compliance with the judgment of the court. I have no choice in this matter but to work along with my lawyers to ensure that we as government fully complies with the ruling of the court, which means basically that I be reinstated in my position as Associate Justice as directed by that court. Nothing less. The issue is not the money. This is about ensuring that a government must understand that there is a country called Liberia which is governed by laws, and those laws must be complied with. Not a damn will take until these orders by the court, including reinstatement, are fully complied with.
Assuming, Justice Janet, that the Liberian Supreme Court does not respect the rulings of the ECOWAS Court, what's next for you? What are you going to do?
Well, in that instance, I'll be left with the unfortunate situation to seek further actions and remedies from the court, and that is returning to the ECOWAS Court and invoking whatever is available in terms of legal application to ensure that there are consequences for non-compliance with this judgment.
There was a judicial conference last week in Liberia, and it took place amid criticism of corruption in the Liberian judicial system. From your viewpoint, where are we in terms of the independence of the judiciary?
The independence of the judiciary is at its lowest ebb at this time in our country. There has to be a cleansing of the filth in the judiciary, in order for us to move forward, in order to rekindle public confidence in the system. The fact that at this just ended conference, there was an indication that the retirement of Justice be removed from this 70-year thing and was just totally rejected by the conference, symbolizes, in my view, the ebb of low confidence in those who currently mind the system. There is a gigantic filth that needs to be cleansed in order for the people once again to say, yeah, we have a judiciary that we can go to for redress when we have difficult challenges. This is not what we have right now. Mr. Bury, the fact that judicial orders are issued at the highest level of the judiciary, the Supreme Court, and they are not respected, clearly demonstrate that what we have today that you call the Supreme Court is merely an extension of the executive department, of the legislative department. And therefore, you cannot have people having confidence in this kind of system. No.
Associate Justice Janet, thank you so much for taking time to talk with us. I appreciate very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bode.
Kabina Muhammad Jana is the former Associate Justice of Liberia's Supreme Court. He was speaking with us from Lagos, Nigeria. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, June 14th. Cameroon has offered huge consignments of food and mattresses to at least 3,000 displaced persons said to be in dire need on its eastern border with the Central African Republic. Most of the people displaced by post-election violence in the Central African Republic say they lost everything and that the violence still keeps them from returning home.
At least 700 displaced people from the Central African Republic turned out in Kenzo, an administrative unit on Cameroon's eastern border with the CAR, on Friday to receive assistance from the host country. One day earlier, Cameroon said it had sent a delegation led by Territorial Administration Minister Paul Atanganji to eastern Cameroon to help those displaced by the CAR crisis. Nji visited several border villages and administrative units, including Kenzu and Garoua Bulai. Nji says he distributed food and humanitarian assistance from the government of Cameroon. He says Cameroon decided to assist displaced persons after local government officials said the Central Africans were living in poverty.
Il a fallu mobiliser 27 camions.
He says the government of Cameroon mobilized 17 trucks to transport mattresses, blankets, buckets, and food to at least 3,400 displaced people. He says besides the gifts, President Paul Biya instructed him to tell the displaced persons to live in peace and respect Cameroon's laws. He says Cameroon wants to know when the displaced will want to voluntarily return to the CAR. The violence that sparked the exodus involves armed groups and has been ongoing since Ousmane Askanje Touadéra was re-elected president in December. Much of the trouble is centered on border areas. It is suspected that fleeing rebels are among the displaced persons. Ngi said Cameroon was delighted that the items will improve the living conditions of the displaced persons until they go home. Donatien Barker, the mayor of Kenzo, however, says host communities have been reporting clashes with the displaced Central Africans and that the area is no longer secure.
C'est un point de franchissement et des marchandises.
Barker says between 2017 and 2020, 32,000 people displaced by the fighting have sought refuge in Kenzo. He says the influx inundated the 28,000 inhabitants of Kenzo and that theft of food and cattle and conflicts over lodging and farmlands were reported daily. He says Cameroon reinforced its military in Kenzo in January when rebels protesting the CAR leadership came to Kenzo illegally. Barker said he did not have updated figures of the number of displaced people remaining in Kenzo because movement across the porous border is uncontrolled. He said when there is fighting in CAR, people cross over to Cameroon. He said his wish is for the displaced persons to return to their country. Marshal Betty Maras is the CAR ambassador to Cameroon. He says peace is gradually returning to CAR and civilians who fled fighting should agree to voluntarily return to their country. He spoke via the messaging app WhatsApp from CAR's capital Bangui. He says democratic institutions are gradually being put in place after the December 27th elections in which a majority of CAR civilians voted for Ousmane Askanje Touadéra as their president. He says a majority of civilians who fled bloody conflicts between government troops and rebels in CAR have voluntarily returned and are living in peace in their towns and villages. Betty Maras said Cameroon and CAR are both struggling to maintain the collective peace because a crisis in either country affects them both. He said Cameroon and the CAR are trying to convince displaced persons to return and contribute to the development of their country. Violence among armed groups since 2013 has forced close to 1 million Central Africans to flee to neighboring Cameroon, Chad, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Nigeria. Cameroon shares a 900-kilometer boundary with the CAR. Cameroon's Territorial Administration Minister says Cameroon is home to more than 300,000 displaced Central Africans. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Botswana authorities said HIV infections rose by 33% after the country went into a lockdown to fight the spread of COVID-19. The increase has been attributed to a decrease in condom use, with COVID-19 restrictions affecting distribution. Reporter Umkundisi Dube has the details from Habaruni.
The Botswana Government Coordinating Body National AIDS and Health Promotions Agency, NAPA, says 8,860 new infections were recorded in 2020. NAPA Acting Coordinator Robert Seladu says the figure represents a 33% increase recorded particularly among the youth. Seladu told Parliament Thursday that limited condom distribution and use due to the COVID-19 could have contributed to the new infections.
We have managed to distribute over 27 million pieces of condoms, although the distribution has gone down, because in the previous years we've had 41 million pieces that were distributed in 2019 and then 44 million in 2018. So during the period when people were in lockdown, chances are activities were taking place unprotected.
During the first lockdown between March and May last year, Botswana reported a critical condom shortage. This was due to COVID-19 restrictions, with overseas suppliers failing to meet demand. Despite the spike in infection figures, Seladu says Botswana is making progress in reducing transmissions and HIV-related deaths. The latest NAPA statistics show 374,000 Botswana nationals, almost a quarter of the population, are HIV positive. Botswana records nearly 9,000 new HIV infections every year, with 5,000 reported deaths.
Both new infections and AIDS-related deaths are estimated to have reduced by 37% and 22% respectively since 2010. And this is commendable progress. This is largely attributable to biomedical interventions that we have in place, the PMTCT, the ART program, and condom use, and to some extent, but very limited, behavioral change issues.
Despite the reduction in infections and mortality, Seladu says the figures are still off the United Nations target, but Botswana has received praise for its HIV interventions, with 95% of the HIV-positive population on antiretroviral therapy, ART. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Haboroni, Botswana.
Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports in Phoenix, Arizona, where Nigerian-born Israel Adesanya won by unanimous decision to remain undefeated in the UFC 263 mixed martial art in the middleweight division of the weekend. Israel Adesanya left no one in doubt in the rematch, pummeling Marvin Vittori with a flurry of kicks to the head and legs to defend his title. The Nigerian-born New Zealander won 50-45 on all three judges' scorecards in the third full capacity UFC event.
I wanted to punch him in the face more, but credit to him and his boxing coach, I'll say they improved their boxing a bit. So I think they thought that would be enough, but it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough.
Yeah.
I think there was the my favorite bit of the fight actually so far was when he thought he had a rear naked choke, and he probably got excited like, yes, this is it, my moment. And then I wasn't even bothered. I wasn't threatened, and I turned it on him.
Since 2019, Israel Adesanya has been undefeated as a middleweight, losing only once in 22 fights to Poland's Jan Barkowicz. In athletics, with barely 6 weeks to the 2020 Summer Olympics, Team Uganda will be traveling to Japan in six batches, with the first batch of 53 athletes and officials expected to touch base in Japan on the 18th of this month. The last batch of Ugandan long-distance athletes and officials are expected to arrive in Zumisiano after the 20th of July. President of the Uganda Olympic Committee, Don Rokari, says officials to accompany their athletes were carefully selected following directives from the IOC Games Organizing Committee.
So group number one will hopefully leave on the 18th of June, and then they'll start 18th, 29th, 5th July, and then the others will come just before the game starts, before on the 20th of July, and then maybe another last group will come after, especially the long distance runners. So we're expecting them to come in different batches, but overall, as I said, what is guiding us is the COVID situation and ensuring that they are safe.
And elsewhere in Rwanda, the Kenyan's cricket Lionesses at the weekend won the fourth Kibuka Memorial Women's T20 title in Kigali after a 7-wicket win over Namibia. Rwanda remained without the title but finished their campaign with a sweet double over Nigeria's green and yellow girls to take the third place. The Kibuka tournament is one of the remembrance events of the 1994 Rwandan genocide. And finally, in football news, the final African Cup of Nations qualifier between Sierra Leone and Benin Republic will go ahead. The Court of Arbitration for Sport issued a final ruling on the match, confirming that the game should go ahead rather than be awarded as a win to Benin Republic. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, June 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with all our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a great week.